What's up, everybody? It's Joe LaPuma. You were listening. You were watching the Complex Sneaker Show. As always, I'm joined by my two co-hosts, my two friends to my right, Mr. Matt Welty.
Feels like it's been forever.
It has. We're back, though. To my left, since my brother in varsity gone, jacket, so Mr. Brendan Dunn.
I miss you. A
little bit of how we doing?
For you. I'm doing all right.
How we doing? We're back.
I'm feeling good, yeah.
Big
just one,
week.
Just 1 week off, but we're here. We're back. We're back.
We are back.
You like, yeah. You like that?
Yeah, I know. A little tease.
Yeah.
A little tease for the episode.
Yes. Yes.
Got a really good show today. Great guest.
Yep.
Going to talk about designing and the innovation of, and I know that you guys don't like, I feel like you guys have side conversations when I say iconic sneaker. No, this is an iconic sneaker.
Yes, the Reebok Pump.
Reebok Pump. Paul Litchfield is here.
Iconic.
What else do we got?
I want to discuss some upcoming Air Jordans.
Okay.
Air Jordan 5 Metallic, Air Jordan 3 Nina Chanel Abney collab. Mm-hmm.
What about the Flu Game Air Jordan 12s?
Yeah, you had something about like a little internal
kind of... Well, manufacturers of controversy.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. Also, LeBron vote back sneakers. This needs to be addressed.
Let's do it. What's cracking since we've been gone?
The tectonic plates are cracking. The earth is shifting. I was out of town for the earthquake. Did y'all experience the earthquake?
I was in L.A.
I didn't experience it at all.
You thought you just dropped a dumbbell at the box?
I literally just... I
was working
it
out?
I didn't feel it. I didn't...
You didn't feel it?
No.
People, is that cause for concern?
Maybe, I don't know.
Did your building, did anyone hit you up? Like, hey, do you have a earthquake safety guide for your building?
Nope, sorry.
Is the building up to code?
I have no idea.
Oh, wow.
Probably not.
Okay.
Important questions. I was actually nervous about it because I thought maybe my shoes were going to fall over. I have an office with a lot of sneakers stacked high, precariously placed, and I was worried that the magnitude of it would have shifted them and caused them to fall. Because sometimes if I move my chair the wrong way in my tight little office at home, the shoes will fall over.
Is a 4.8 doing that, though?
I mean, I don't know. I wasn't here to experience it, but I feel like it could have, but they were safe.
Thank goodness.
Something sneaker related I want to get your guys' opinion on.
Please.
I guess it's rumored that, or people are saying that the Flu Game Air Jordan 12 is coming back, right? Mm-hmm. And our social guy, friend of the program, Ben Felderstein, said that he hopes that the Flu Game shoe coming back would have been the 2009 version with the suede and the sick face on the tongue.
I don't think we need that. I think if the Flu Game is coming back, make it as OG as possible.
I agree.
Joe, what do you think?
No thoughts on that whatsoever.
Do you guys like that version, though?
I don't even like... I like the regular one, but yeah. Was that a big thing back then?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
That, you mean a big thing that it was changed?
Yeah, was that like a big thing? Like, this is like... one of the first times I'm like hearing about it. No, that Ben prefers that, or like that that it was even a discussion.
Yeah, he had sent out a tweet from the Complex Sneakers account saying, I hope that like this is, it's like in my mind, I hope that this is the version that comes back. I know it's not going to happen, but I was just wondering if you guys like that version at all, because there was a little bit of discussion around
it. I don't think we need that. And I think those little idiosyncratic versions of Jordan retros that pertain to specific years that had little tweaks on them, I don't think the retros that come out in successive years should refer back to those.
Whether you like the shoe or not, you think it's cool, is just almost like a time capsule where like there was this one version that was like that and just leave it at that, then rather than trying to repeat.
Yeah,
I would think so.
The return of the Flu Game Air Jordan 12 should be based on the original, not on the 2009 random one. It's like if the Fire Red Air Jordan 4 came back and you had the Mars Blackman stamp on it again. We don't need more versions of the Mars.
Although
I agree with that.
I did like that version. I know, I don't think you like that one, right?
Yeah,
Mars
really.
Blackman?
I like the Mars Blackman.
I like that version too, but anytime you bring up that shoe, you hear the same exact thing. The quality was terrible.
Yeah. I think that whole era of Jordan retros in general was just... Yeah, I mean, retro shoes in general in
mid 2000s.
Like, maybe, but that one specifically, like everyone I talk to, people who have it, because there was a time where I wanted that shoe for a while.
You wanted a white Air Jordan 4?
Yeah, I did. I wanted with the Mars on it.
It was 20 years ago.
And every time it was like, man, they'd like crease.
You made me feel so old by saying that shoe released almost 20 years ago.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I don't think in that era that brands really paid as much attention to the art of retro as they do now, where they're like, hey, we need this premium material. We need to look at the OG specs. Back then it was kind of like, kind of looks like the shoe.
Yeah. And the complaints weren't loud enough yet and widespread enough to really demand that Jordan brand do things like remastering, or Nike bring back an original Air Max 1 with the 86 Big Bubble. That thing didn't really emerge until the 2010s, as far as I can remember.
I mean, the Flu Game 12 to me in the OG is just such like a beautiful shoe.
Yes.
Like the
original that leather,
one.
Like pristine to me.
Yes. Speaking of bringing shoes back, I have to mention this. I saw this on Twitter a few weeks back, and I've neglected to reference it on the show until now, but the guy Karate Kicks 23 on Twitter, I saw this. He mentioned that Joe's doing his best Karate Kid.
Yeah, they used to say I looked like the Karate Kid growing up a little. Really? Daniel LaRusso, yeah.
Crane kick, no Jaden Smith?
Not Jaden Smith. Daniel LaRusso, a.k.a. Ralph Macchio. People used to say I looked like him a little bit. Come on. You could see the resemblance, right?
We'll put a photo up in the video version of the podcast. Is that your best?
When I was younger. Not in this Huskies gear, but you could see it.
Joe, shout out the Huskies, right?
We're going to get to that. You think, let him cook, and then listen, I'm going to cook. Go ahead.
We always want to hold the sneaker brands accountable, and this is a good moment to, again, Karate Kicks 23 on Twitter mentioned, in response to a Mr. Unloved One's tweet, he was referencing that it's been 3 years since the Nike LeBron Vote Back program happened on sneakers.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And the Nike LeBron 10 Ring Ceremony PE was the one that won.
Well, I think, yeah
look, don't get him started.
You were upset about it.
Oh, my goodness.
It's not even.
He had the Arthur meme. I remember that.
Veins popping out.
It's not even being upset. It's just there was like a bunch of issues in general. Just, I know you say things are subjective with all of those things, and voting is voting. But I think that at the time, or I think maybe even still to this day, Nike really valued people's time in the sneakers app, you know, where it's like how much you engage with stuff would boost your
chances to win, seemingly. They never said that outright. Yeah,
but so I think a lot of people, if they just saw something, they're like, hey, I need to engage with this.
You're right. That was big era on the sneakers app where you would click everything and watch every video and tap every icon you could because you thought maybe it would help you get a slightly better chance.
And it felt like
Nike
was using these voting things to try to like crown a champion through the sneakers app, where it felt like in reality it was mostly people just opening it and just boom, 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 trying to get through it as fast as they could. Because when you looked at a lot of those brackets, and it's not that like the shoe you like didn't win, it was just like these massive landslides of like, this is the shoe that is pretty much unanimously like the more popular sneaker over time versus some random shoe. I think they did like an Air Force One voting program on like that. And you're just like, wait.
Some of those decisions by the sneakers voting community were heinous.
Yeah, they didn't make sense. So it was like a LeBron 10 ends up winning, which is like a shoe that I don't think they really had a lot of plans to retro. And they're probably just like, oh, crap, this wasn't what we thought was going to happen.
Yeah. I remember you didn't like that at all.
It was just, I think a lot of that stuff was just, it was just disappointing. If you're trying to like do a public like vote of record about which shoe is the best, and then it's just people are using it just to game their.
Yeah, but you don't know why people actually
you don't,
voted that way.
You don't, but if it's things just come out so wonky,
you have to wonder.
Yeah, it just makes you like, hey, why are we even, what are we going to use this as?
You weren't mad, you were disappointed.
Right?
Okay, but the real thing to be disappointed in is that vote back thing for the Nike LeBron series where the Nike LeBron 10 ring ceremony was crowned the champion and was the shoe that Nike was going to bring back, quote, at a later date. It's been 3 years. This was January 2021. There's no sign of the shoe.
I don't think it's ever coming back.
You think Nike's just totally abandoned that?
Yeah, totally.
Well, we haven't forgotten, Nike. You owe us that sneaker. Some other sneakers from that bracket have been released since. Like, you can't just say at a later date. Just any point in the future.
Also, there was I think we talked about it on here as well, the KoJP bracket that they had, and the shoe that ended up winning wasn't even a KoJP.
I don't remember that.
Shoe. They did it was like the best KoJP shoe sneaker of all time, and it was that like un-Tiffany dunk that has like the fake fluorescent croc skin on it that like was a journey shoe.
Yeah,
they had it win the KoJP bracket.
Well, listen,
anyways,
are you done?
I'm done.
Listen, talking about a lot of brackets, okay? Those brackets are over. You know what else is over?
Tell us.
March Madness is over. The Huskies back to back. You see it.
Your alma mater.
Yeah, my alma mater. I got to the first game in Barclays with Jack Irwin
this year.
Yeah.
They didn't give you a preferential treatment to the finals?
They asked if I wanted to go. I was filming. Huskies went back to back. Mm-hmm. You see the jacket. Got it off eBay.
Vintage?
This year, vintage. Starter? 90s. Starters.
Yeah.
Buttery.
Show them the logo.
Buttery. It came from the Ukraine.
Good.
Took 6 months, but we're here.
I know the feeling. My brother bought me a
I can't see
Christmas gift from Ukraine, and it took many months to arrive.
Get a close up, baby. Get a close up. I know the mic. Good thing we have two mics because I just
pushed the mic out of the way.
Yeah, get a close up.
So they could see also, the Huskies patch on the arm.
There we go. Also, mm-hmm. if you know, you know, Coach Luke Murray ones on. That's what we call them. In stores, we call these the Coach Luke Murray ones. You don't know anything about it. I do.
Or should they just know if they
know? If you know, you know.
Okay. Okay.
I saw a meme lately recently where someone had on like three different sports teams and they said this is the parlay fit.
Is that me?
Yeah. You got the Yankees hat.
I know. Huskies I thought thing, about that. I don't
Barcelona
care,
sneakers.
Listen.
Literally three different teams. Barcelona, UConn, and the Yankees.
Multi-sport athlete.
Really?
Multi-sport athlete.
Joe
yes.
knows? Bo La Puma?
Exactly. JLP knows.
I am excited, though, that Jersey City's finest.
There we go.
Dan Hurley.
Shared interest.
Yes. A friend of a program, former coworker of ours, Warren Cochran, who works at Jordan Brand.
Yes.
Now, he had said that Dan Hurley was yelling, I think, at Zach Edey or something. He was going to put that Journal Square on him, which is the neighborhood yep. where I'm at. And that made me smile.
As long as there was a smile on your face, I'm happy.
Back to back, shouts to stores, shouts to everyone, UConn Huskies.
I wish I had something I could celebrate in this. You guys both have a connection.
I'm trying to think
you're
what
strong
you could do.
Tenuous, but I don't.
Let me think if there's anything related to the champion. No, I don't think so.
More sneaker stuff, though. One shoe that I'm curious about whether it's a big JLP shoe or not has a chance to be Amon Mounier Air Jordan 3s.
I like it.
The black pair.
I like it.
I like those shoes a lot.
Medium JLP shoe.
Okay. Is that the new rating system?
Yeah. Medium.
Let me say right that they here. Don't feel that special because we've seen so much Amon Mounier Air Jordan work, so much social yeah. status Air Jordan work. The collaborations keep coming. We spoke about this at the end of the last year, how they have so many sneakers on the way. And I think it's okay that they don't feel that special anymore. And this shoe does not make drastic changes to the Black Cement Air Jordan 3, but I still think it looks clean. And I think that Amon Mounier have found their lane. And found their aesthetic when it comes to Air Jordan retros, and this is a great execution of it.
I think it's hard to mess up a black Air Jordan 3 with Nike Air on the back.
Right? I disagree.
Talk
I
about
disagree
it.
Because it's a you're going against iconic ones in the line. So I think that you're going to be judged on
yeah.
very
I think
classic
it still checks
Air
enough,
Jordan 3s.
Still checks enough boxes to get people to go out and purchase it.
People will go out and purchase these.
I like the fives. I've been saying that. The black fives.
You're still trying to add those to your collection?
Those are nice.
I really like those fives.
Wait, fives and threes. There's a few more that I want to talk about.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if I was done with my thought, but.
Wait. go on. I think it was.
Still not done.
I think it was an iconic leaked photo. That was probably one of the worst potato. The shoe literally looked like.
Three?
Yes, it literally yeah. looked like a potato.
Yeah. But I will always defend, Joe, I know you still have to finish your thought. I will always defend leak photos because I do believe in showing people the sneakers early on. And also, I believe that people should have a diverse view of the sneakers, not just the cleanest, best possible presentation of it from the people who made it. I think you should also see what it looks like with a bad camera or with a medium camera.
But an early leak to you is infinitely better than what we talked about, those
mock-ups.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not. I don't know. Infinitely better, but yes, I'll take the leak.
Finishing my thought.
Nope. Sorry. No piss.
Okay.
Sorry.
Amon Mounier 5 is sometimes I talk about when I'm filming the show, sneaker shopping. You just see on the wall, like,
yeah.
these are really good. Those Amon Mounier 5s, the black ones, are one that I'm always like, man, they did a really good job.
It's a shoe you see on the shelf and you think, yes. I might have to purchase these.
You know, you brought up recently the OG Jordan 5s, black and metallic.
Did I manifest this, Joe?
Black and metallic. Those came up.
Did I manifest this?
Manifest what?
It looks like the black metallic Air Jordan 5 is coming back as a retro next year. That's the rumor. And days before that was announced, you heard me say to you, I think I need a new pair of black metallic 5s. Did you not?
You did say that. Then, two things on that. Mm-hmm. One, there's an upcoming episode of Sneaker Shopping where super producer Dave Matthews gets shouted out by the talent.
Wow.
For his black metallic 5s.
What a moment.
Also, Dave Matthews, this mother shows up last week to a shoot.
Uh-huh. Do we have photos of this that we can put in the episode?
Yes, we have photos.
Turn the video on.
First of all, 8 days before he shows up to this shoot in LA that I just did,
uh-huh.
he gets complimented on the black metallic Jordan 5s.
Huge look.
Stop the production. Who? You'll see it. You'll see it soon.
You left it in the episode?
Yeah, we left it in. 8 days later, we shoot again.
Mm-hmm.
He shows up. Atlanta Air Max 95s.
Oh, he's cooking.
and doesn't even say anything on the slide. Has his little clipboard with the pocket protector, with the set shot list, everything. I look down. He's wearing the Atlanta Air Max 95s. I said, this guy has some nerve. But
big up KO from ATATF, who was all them on the sneakers app talking all about the sneaker.
I ordered them on the plane home. They're
Wi-Fi
coming.
Lit?
Fly-Fi, JetBlue Wi-Fi. Thank you. The Wi-Fi got me through. Dave Matthews really embracing this sneaker show.
Do you see how bored he is by this story? Yes. Wealthy almost took a nap in the last 38 seconds.
Oh, listen.
When you start talking about like Wi-Fi experiences on planes, that's when it's just like...
Sorry you can't relate.
doesn't do anything for me.
Okay. We could talk about Metro North Wi-Fi?
No. Speaking of sneaker shopping, did you check in on your boy IShowSpeed?
I didn't.
This is where I go to sleep. Because we're talking about wrestling now.
Great
and
moment.
I'm out.
Great moment. IShowSpeed, the prime drink.
I needed to catch up on my Z's. Go ahead.
Took the bump in black foam posits.
Took the bump?
Yeah.
Isn't this a family show?
No, that's what you call wrestling. I know what you're talking about. And I don't know anything about that.
I have a cold. That's why I'm sniffling.
I don't know anything about that. The bump, I do know. He took a bump from Liv Morgan.
Yep.
Okay. You know, that's
right. Got you.
Still,
I'm not paying attention because this is wrestling.
But IShowSpeed took the bump, black foams. But WrestleMania.
Black foams, you got me. Now I'm back out. You WrestleMania.
Yeah, he had WrestleMania. A lot of sneaker shopping crossover moments, all I'm going to say. Undertaker choke slamming the final boss, The Rock. See the eyebrow?
Well, Welty could do a good eyebrow raise.
Can you?
I can't, no.
Yeah,
I
you
can.
Were doing it earlier.
I can.
I think that's maybe not on purpose.
Yeah. You're lucky I don't have my eclipse shades on. You could have really seen the eyebrow. But.
I'm going to put a photo in here of you wearing the Eclipse shades.
Oh, yeah, we have that. Undertaker chokeslamming The Rock in the Hokas he bought at Concepts in Boston. Man, did we get a lot of content out of that.
Too much.
Not too much. It all went off.
I'm happy for you guys.
Happy for the Huskies, too. Look, we're still here, baby.
Okay.
What else?
Black Metallic Air Jordan 5s are coming back. I need them. Also,
oh, wow. I forgot we just went on a rant. Okay. Okay.
Nina Chanel Abney Air Jordan 3s.
Nice. Nice?
Those are nice.
More than nice.
Come on.
She made a beautiful
response
shoe.
To those?
Yeah.
You know, people are saying.
Are they saying it? Is it too early?
S-O-T-Y contender it's already?
April. We're barely in April right now, Joe.
That's what people are saying. You know, people have a tendency as soon as shoes get previewed, they say we're maybe a sneaker that we're only in April.
I think it's like that shoe I do think is good, and I do think if everything goes through with it, it will be on a top 10 list at mm-hmm. the end of the year. I just think it's like everyone's so hungry right now where it's like every semi-decent shoe that comes out, they're like, sneaker of the year?
You do it all the time.
I do
you
it.
You do it all the time.
Yes. You put them on your Twitter. You say these dang
or unless you're trolling,
freaking...
but you do it all the time.
It's a joke.
Oh, okay. That's what I said.
It's like an ongoing sort of like,
got
this
it,
is the
it,
greatest sneaker
it.
Moment of all time. Like, it's not...
Okay. No, but you don't say greatest sneaker. Sometimes I believe that you're saying that.
I put in a picture of Kim Kardashian wearing Air Max 95 saying sneaker moment of the year. Like, it's
I know,
not,
but
I'm not being 100% serious. I like the photo, but it's just like, it's a play on people, everyone saying sneaker of the year, sneaker moment of the year. Yes.
Listen, you sit right across from me. We're communicating now. I didn't know it was a joke.
Yeah, it's a joke.
Okay.
Okay.
But to your point, that's why I thought, I was like, oh, you always do that. I didn't know. I know sneaker moment of the year has
a little
joke.
Facetious.
But sometimes I really think that you...
There's certain things I like, and it's just like my personal take on it. I don't really think that this is like quote unquote sneaker of the year. But I will say that the only shoe that I think really comes into contention so far for legitimate sneaker of the year that's come
in
out
April.
In April is the AE one.
Yes.
Yes. Anthony Edwards.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll,
that's
we'll,
a good show.
We'll save that.
We'll revisit that.
We love that. So many years of Adidas basketball showing the line.
And you're like,
okay. Okay. Another one. Go up to wherever it was, 34, wherever the office was. All right. We have these 30 models. AE1, though. It's going to be on that list.
It's going to be on our list.
It's
a little tough because of the dates, because I think it technically released at the end of last year, but it wasn't really heating up that much at that point, so we might have to give it
grace.
Usher it in. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We've made concessions before.
Do you guys like the Harden, though? Some people seem to be on the train with that, and I just...
Nope. Doesn't do anything for me. Nina Chanel Abney, though, Air Jordan 3. Yeah. And... a cool shoe because you know right away how much thought she put into it. Matt Welty commented on the photo when she first previewed it.
Yeah.
And you said you didn't really like the little orange tag that was on there. And she replied to your comment saying you can cut them off in case you don't like them. Like she already had thought about that.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Popped his chain.
Making news out here.
Yeah. Yep. Also, he tweeted.
What the heck did I do?
No, you didn't. No, you didn't say that. You said making the news and you did the screen grab. Okay. It's true.
Start but that really wasn't trying to fluff my own feathers. I really thought that was like a cool.
Yeah.
A little anecdote.
Tidbit of information to share with people.
Yeah.
Definitely a little anecdote.
I love this industry. Love this game. You know what? I just came back from Portland. Always a good time.
Shouts to Index. I'm sure you were there.
Yeah, I was at Index.
Can you tell us about all the shoes you saw in the back that you can't talk about?
Not yet, but not yet. Street saying, though, he was in the back room of Index like he was working stock with his little MacBook Pro, though. Street saying
Mikey,
that?
Mikey, T, Cam, everybody there. What up?
Shouts to Index.
I always have a good time out there. Meet up with some industry people, which is always fun for me. And a reminder, too, that we sit up here a lot and we talk about Nike losing its way and the momentum they may not have and how it feels like what they do is dictated by bean counters. But being in Portland and seeing the people who actually make this stuff is a reminder to me that there are still cool people who really care about footwear trying to make.
Did you see any bean counters, though?
I think maybe you're hinting at a story between.
No, I'm not.
I think you're hitting at a story.
I'm not hitting at anything.
Oh, okay.
No.
What?
I'm not hitting anything. You said no.
In close proximity to one executive.
I wasn't even referencing that.
Yeah.
You're just saying you saw a lot of cool people making the shoes, but there's also a lot of people just being bean counters. So I'm saying if you ran into any of those.
No, I didn't. But it was heartening to have a reminder that people really do care about this footwear thing, and they're working hard and, you know, actual cool people among the bean counters.
Okay.
But we're back. I'm back.
Backhanded compliment.
No. That's not a backhanded compliment at all.
What do you think the ratio to cool people at Nike to bean counters is?
Come on.
Somebody's got to count the beans.
Come on. Talking about some history.
We got history today.
Oh, we do.
Yeah.
And history that's come up a lot.
Yeah.
Lately.
Decades.
Yeah.
We have a wonderful guest.
Yeah. We do.
Should we bring our guest on?
Let's do it. Our guest on today's podcast is an industry vet with over 35 years of design and innovation expertise in the footwear space. He created one of the most iconic sneakers of all time, the Reebok Pump, which is not only etched in sneaker history, but sport and pop culture history as well. Throughout his career, shoes that he's created have moved over a million pairs. He currently serves as the head of footwear at GoRuck, a company that emphasizes gear for rucking, an elevated type of hiking that loads a backpack for intense training. Here to talk about all his footwear history, please welcome Paul Litchfield. Paul, thank you so much for coming, giving us your time. So much history to talk about. Came from Boston?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Fresh off the flight from Boston. So excited to have you here.
I appreciate being here. Yeah. Thanks for the invite, guys.
Yeah, Paul, the first thing we usually do is talk about our sneakers or our footwear. Can you tell us what you have on feet right now?
So right now I have a pair of GoRuck boots. They're called the Mac V1s. They're part of our original kind of legacy boot collection. And this is our Traveler, which is a full leather boot. It's got leather lining. It's wicked comfortable. Mm-hmm. And it goes all day. It can dress up and look as snazzy as I do, or it can be nice. Or it can be a good work boot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very fitting. Traveler, you traveled down for us.
Yes, sir.
I put some Reeboks on, tried to be fitting as well.
Nice. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
The old ExoFits.
Workout Plus. Big collaboration. Yep. This is a shoe I wore for many years, as Matt Welty remembers, and made them quite crusty and have gone through a couple pairs. I didn't think I had a fresh pair.
Yeah.
Oh.
Access to one.
That's good. You're going to make those crusty as well?
I might have to crustify them.
Some deodorizer would work.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
I'm doing the Barcelona.
I like it.
Air Max Plus.
Yep.
TNs. Yep. Coach Murray ones, like I said. Shouts to UConn again.
These are the Joe Freshgood New Balance 1000s.
Nice. Team early, huh?
Yep.
Must be nice.
The pink pair.
Yep.
Paul, so much history.
Man, I like that you're here because I've been doing some episodes of sneaker shopping and the Reebok Pump has come up like three times in the past three episodes.
Cool.
So happy to like peel the layers back from the guy who invented them.
Well, thank you. Well, yeah. Invent is a pretty strong word. Put it together? Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it was a great product and had a lot of fun making it.
How did it start?
So basically, back in the mid-80s, I was at Reebok, and basketball as a sport was changing a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, you had Dr. J in the ABA, but then you had Magic, you had Bird, you had, you know, the game was getting faster, it was getting a lot mm-hmm. more of a player's game, right? Yeah. The sneakers at the time, the basketball shoes, had to evolve with them from a functional standpoint. So one of the tasks we had at Reebok is we had a really decent emerging basketball line with the original BB 4600, 5600, 6600. Yeah. And they were great shoes.
And Reebok was crushing it at the time.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, we were just on the next plateau of really beginning to crush it. And so the challenge was to make a better basketball shoe, a shoe that was more supportive and that could support these, you know, these huge athletes that were moving at a pace that nobody ever had kind of previously anticipated. So we looked at a whole bunch of different things. Like we looked at straps, we looked at braces, we looked at all kinds of things that were intended to support the ankle and things like that without limiting the range of motion. And then we, through a series of events, we ended up looking at some inflatable methods, you know, air casts, air splints and things like that. Mm-hmm. So we, through a series of twists and turns, settled on this this pump mechanism, and the pump ended up being a method that could essentially customize a mass built shoe. Mm-hmm. So you know, the four of us here, let's say we're all about the same size. You know, each one of our feet even are slightly different in fit mm-hmm. and size and volume. So the intent of the pump was to make it so that the shoe would literally envelop your foot.
And through like the pump.
Oh yeah.
Through like,
and you have one of the original pumps
right there.
So like the amount of like pumps could be custom. That's what would be the customized aspect of the shoe to your foot.
Yeah. So Joe, so like we were talking earlier.
Yeah.
We had a couple of first models. And the first models, this was before it was the pump. And we had a manual pump with a release mechanism on the side of the shoe, on the outside. Mm-hmm. It was a little, basically a little car tire valve or bicycle tire valve. Yeah. And it had a heel pump on the back. And then we had a second one, which I thought was way cooler, which was, it had a little dial on the lateral side of the shoe. And that dial was like essentially a dimmer switch. It could go all the way open or all the way closed or somewhere in between. And then we had a little heel pump inside of the shoe.
Okay.
And it inflated automatically. So we did a bunch of testing in January, February of 1989, prior to the pump being the pump. And it turned out that the basketball players that we were testing in the Boston area, they all kind of would sit down when they were in between scrimmages or games, and they'd be pumping the back of their heel. And it was a lesson to me, particularly at the time, because I thought like, oh, the cool one's the cool one. Mm-hmm. But the customer, the players, they were interacting with the manual.
This element
pump.
Of delight.
Yeah. And then they were releasing it, and you could hear a little.
It's like a dopamine.
Yeah,
hit.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if social media existed? It would have went triple platinum. Testing and, players pumping.
Well,
it.
Joe, thanks to D. Brown and Dominique and some of the other guys, it did go triple platinum.
Did go triple platinum. Diamond,
without a doubt, and Shaq and all the boys who did it. But so what happened? Getting back to your thing, Joe, was that like when we finally when it became clear that we're going to do a manual pump, we had to change from those early models to what is considered now, sorry, and this thing's falling.
Yes, as
the original. Just peeling back the fourth wall.
Yep.
There's some. You have to be very careful with this. This is an OG, and it almost
peeling back literally.
Yeah, almost collapsed. The sole almost collapsed just now. So I'm not touching it.
Well, Paul, and I know I don't have gloves on right now, but and I know that all the sneaker aficionados out in the world, they'll recognize when you have a PU midsole or PU material. Regardless of what you do, you can hermetically seal it, but it just degrades over time.
Yeah.
So this was June of 1989, and unfortunately, the shoe is literally falling apart. I had some of the earlier ones mm-hmm. that were even more fragile. I just couldn't bring them, but you know, we can see them later.
Got it.
So this basically had the pump on the tongue.
How did you come up with, like you said you had that, and how did you come up with the actual basketball?
So this was really cool. So basically, from that first one, which was the pump shot, which had the pump on the heel, we couldn't manufacture it. You could make it, but you couldn't manufacture it. It took us a long time to like hand assemble it, literally. So it was a great shoe. It worked well, but it wasn't designed for manufacturing. So in a last minute panic, when Paul Fireman, who was the owner of Reebok.
Legend.
We had shown these at the Atlanta Super Show. I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember Atlanta Super Show, but it used to be like
That was the CES of the
sportswear brands come out and show their new product.
Oh, sorry, man. So what happened was at the Atlanta Super Show in February, we had a closed room where you could try on the pumps. Now, at the same time, Nike had their Air Pressure.
Yeah.
And it was really slick. They had this, right as you were walking in the Nike booth, it was under glass, all lights, and it looked...
You went to the Nike booth? You weren't afraid to just go in there behind enemy
lines? I wasn't allowed in. You could look at the entrance. No, Nike was pretty tight on that.
Yeah.
So it was under glass, and I thought, like, oh, shit. It was a done shoe. Ours was were prototypes. Mm-hmm. And so... fast forward, when we get back from Atlanta, there was a big buzz because people could try on our shoes. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of, you know, the influential people in the business really kind of dug it. They're like, this is really cool. So Paul Fireman's like, all right, we're going to launch this on holiday, you know, at Black Friday mm-hmm. of 1989. And so I was like, we can't make them.
Yeah.
And Paul was pretty clear that, you know, if I was going to remain a Reebok employee, that it'll be made.
Mm-hmm. We'll find a way.
So what happened was we were working with an outside design firm, Design Continuum, and they were the technical engineering support behind all of this, and they did a great job. But I needed some Reebok eyes of the design. So long story is, I went to our VP of design, Paul Brown, and I said, Paul, here's the pump on the back. It needs to be moved somewhere. Sorry, I'm going to pick this up again.
It stresses me out every time he picks up the shoe.
it needs to be moved somewhere so that we can manufacture it, we can assemble it and stuff like that. So Paul took, I don't know, 4 or 5 days literally, and then he came back with a drawing that looked essentially like this.
Okay. Right?
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure which camera is good. But this one here, and he said, Lich, I made the pump look like a basketball because it's a basketball shoe. And I thought, genius.
That is
genius.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, I don't know any idea how to make this little latex bulb mm-hmm. look like a basketball.
Right,
you know.
Right.
So anyways, we messed around for a few months. We worked on it, and ultimately we came up with the cover, which was the pump cover. But that was Paul Brown basically taking the Reebok kind of design guidance and the philosophy and making it look like that. And then we had to build it.
Mm.
So Black Friday 1989 is the official launch.
Yeah.
So it was $170?
It was. So what happened was, as we're making it with the manufacturing company, I also got the brass tooling, the original brass tooling from this. This is one of the first bladders we made in June of 1989. Still works. And we had to sign a contract with this manufacturer called Dielectric Industries mm-hmm. Out of Massachusetts that made blood bags and sonar buoys and things like that. They welded stuff together, right? And they're like, well, you're going to make 36,000 pairs of these in a year.
I heard the first one was only 7,000 pairs, the first drop.
So what happened was our VP of sales, Bob Mears at the time, he went to Foot Locker and pulled in a favor. He's like, and it was probably a little bit less than 7,000. It was one container.
Okay.
He's like, please, just take these things, you know? Because it wasn't...
Were they skeptical?
Oh, everybody, it was $170.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was, and I mean, arguably, why not be skeptical, right?
I mean, that's like, if you just think for like a comparison, you know, it's like in 1985 when the Air Jordan 1 launches, the shoe's $65.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's $175 4 years later.
That was like 20 racks today. Huh?
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, and also as Reebok, we were known as a performance brand, but we were kind of upstart. We weren't Adidas, we weren't Puma, we weren't the running kind of foundation of Nike. And so, you know, even though we had been in the running, Reebok had been around since 1895 with J.W. Foster and, you know, Chariots of Fire and that kind of stuff, and a legit company, it's just one of those deals where it didn't, you know, it was $170, and it was at the time. So a favor was pulled in, and so we only had about 6,000-7,000 pairs that were produced at first.
And how'd they move?
Here's what happened in the meantime. Started making them in September 20th of 1989. I remember these dates because we were talking earlier. In social media, this stuff all plays like a slick story.
Yeah.
Yes.
I needed the goddamn job. Like I needed to stay employed, and this thing needed to work. And so it was work.
I love that though. Yeah. I love that it's even like, not to bring up Nike, but they had that design contest. Something had to work.
Yeah.
This new generation, it's like this cosmetic thing. You were like fighting for your life to make it.
Yeah, and I wanted to stay employed, and also you know, we. you know, I got a little Irish pride in me. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure the stuff works.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's got to be legit and things like that. And that's just the way it goes. And so it's one of those deals where we end up making it in the first production. So what we did was we literally had this thing tested for hours before it got shipped. So which back then you talk about a basketball shoe cost about $12.50 to $15, right? Mm-hmm. The shoe at the factory level.
To make,
and then it gets up to like $65-$70 or something like that, right? This bladder costs $17.98 alone.
So that costs more than the shoe.
Way more.
Wow.
You know, and then the assembly and stuff. And then what we did was, because it costs so much, every bladder that was made was inflated for 3 hours when it was first made. Then it was inflated for another 3 hours to make sure it held air. After it cooled down and
all
this
kind of stuff.
Complicated
process.
Yeah. Yes.
But then when it shipped out to Korea at the time, when it landed in Korea, another 3 hours inflated to make sure it didn't degrade when we flew it over there, because we didn't know at the time.
These people in the factories must be running out of breath.
Well, here's where it gets, Brendan, here's where it gets really squirrely, because then when you assemble a shoe, it's all stitched together. Needles and air bladders don't work well together, so we inflate it a fourth time for 3 hours on the upper. But then which, and this is one thing to press this thing, because it's a latex bulb. Well, when you have a cover on top of it, it's harder. So at the end of the line, you inflated them. To make sure that they stayed inflated, and then they got deflated, and they got put in the box and shipped every pair.
So there was someone's job that at the end of the line was just to pump up the shoes.
See, this is Matt. Matt's onto something here. Yeah,
this guy.
Yeah,
he pays attention.
He's wicked
smart.
He picks
his spots.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's the hamster on the wheel.
Yeah,
yes,
it works well.
Yes,
my boy over here is
yeah.
wicked
yeah.
smart.
Yeah, just laying in the
smart.
Cut,
yeah,
buddy.
Exactly.
Yes.
Good pickup.
Gotcha. Yeah,
there you
gotcha.
Go. So basically, what happened was. Yeah, they had to do that. Well, after I left, after a couple of weeks, they had another couple of weeks of manufacturing to do, and I had to fly back. And then we, of course, shipped them over, air freighted them over and finished. And then when we got to the warehouse in Massachusetts, I said, they all got to be tested. So my buddy Dave called me. He goes, hey, most of these things don't work. I'm like, what? I'm like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, most of these don't work. And this is a couple of weeks before the launch. Like, what are you talking about? Well, as it turns out, after I left, people were getting more than fatigued, cramping, trying to fill these things up. After a while. So what they did, Matt, was they took a sewing machine. They took the needle off, but they had the foot of the sewing machine.
Oh, and just, wow.
And pop. Well, it's great if you hit right, and Brendan, you'll see this, but when on this latex bulb, it's great here, but there's a little diaphragm.
Yeah.
It's a plastic diaphragm. The sewing machine has no tactile feel, so if it hits this hard thing, it just rams it down. So that was literally the last time these shoes were ever going to be inflated.
They tried to ChatGPT.
So I'm like, oh. So after all this work, I'm like, all right, I'm done. Well, what we did was I got my couple of my little sample. We had a little sample room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I talked to the sample room folks, and I quietly told, I said, don't say a word to anybody. We took some shoes, and at the top of this, it's a closed tongue. So what we did was we took the stitches off. I took the stitches off. I looked down. I saw a crush valve. Went out to dielectrics, got some new valves. I put them in. Replaced it. These the folks restitched them.
The level of work.
But did you find out that they were using the needle before or after you replaced the valve?
Oh, after. And but because we only had this short run, it was static. So we could change it before they made more.
Got it.
And we did that quickly. And again, it's not video, you know, not real time Zoom calls or anything. Yeah. It's all
What was that phone call like? Though to call when you're calling Korea and you're like tell them to stop using the sewing machine,
probably high pitched and probably a lot of four letter words.
There we
okay?
go. There we go.
They rhyme with Ruck.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, they do rhyme with Ruck. Dude, this kid. Yeah.
Carry
he's my,
on.
He's my straight guy. So anyways, long story short, the team we worked round the clock, literally. Got them and the folks who stitched, the folks who repaired it, they did the hard work. I was hanging out drinking beer, and they ended up fixing it. Nobody knew. I didn't tell that story for years. Nobody knew about that for years and years.
Yeah,
because I'm like I didn't want anyone thinking it was suspect. Anyways, Paul Fireman then held up the shoe, at the Chicago ISPO show. ISPO okay. and Atlanta were, the ISPO was the international version of the CES kind of thing, the Atlanta Super Show. And he said, this is going to be essentially the freestyle of the 90s, meaning it was going to yes. put Reebok on the map yes. in the 1990s. And that started it. And then I got to tell you, and this is where the rubber meets the road, because mm-hmm. we made a product. It worked really well. Super proud of it, super proud of the team and stuff. But then the machine, the marketing team, the advertising team, the PR folks, the athletes, everyone got together and they did some pretty famous first commercials. And
pump,
we had
Pump It Up,
yeah,
air
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember when that commercial like came out?
Oh yeah, I thought it was, so Matt, honest to God, I thought it was absolutely genius. And I thought that it was literally like it hit on topic, on target to what the shoe did.
Yeah. And going right at Nike.
Yeah, and when you had the different athletes, you know, like Byron Scott was like, you know, pump it up 16 yeah. times. And then Doc Rivers was like, you know, pump it up. And then Dominique, like yeah. everyone had their own numbers yes. and stuff. Yeah. And then I think Pat Riley was like, yeah, you just hit this button and you know.
So I was reading, you were getting feedback from everyone and it's saying Dominique Wilkins, but then Pat Riley, he's so particular about everything, him giving feedback. That must have been interesting.
Yeah, and him and Digger Phelps and some of the other yep. people yes. and stuff. And so to be honest, and again, I was saying this to the boys off camera. I interacted with those folks very, okay, very yeah. intermittently. I was making this stuff. There were people who worked with those folks a lot. Joanne Berzake and some of our yep. some mm-hmm. of our folks. You know,
she
Joanne?
Worked on the Shaq line, right?
Yeah, yeah. yeah. And Joanne was like
Armenian legend.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. She's awesome. Joanne, shout out. Yeah. She's awesome. And so Joanne and the team, Mark Holtzman and everyone, they were the ones who did a lot of the front facing stuff. So I didn't work with those guys, but I know okay. that they were a handful sometimes.
And then the D Brown moment, like you knew about the commercial. Did you know that the D Brown moment was coming, or it was organic, or what?
I had the privilege of getting to know D during the 20-year anniversary of the pump and things like that. So I didn't interact with him much when he's a rookie.
Yeah.
But first of all, having a Boston Celtic in the slam dunk competition back then, not typical, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was in there. He was a rookie. He's a smallish dude. I mean, mm-hmm. for yeah. a basketball player, 6'1", 6'2". Mm-hmm. And so it was unlikely. That whole thing where he yes. bent down, that was him. That was kind of spontaneous, and that was something that was just organic. He wanted to set, and then the reaction, I mean, you have to talk to him about this, but I think, you know, the reaction that he got, it just kept on amplifying.
Definitely. I mean, it's like one of the, like, the most iconic sneaker moments.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
He told me in an interview that he was originally going to do something with his hat,
yeah, yeah.
but that he couldn't use his hat because it was considered a prop, yeah, so yeah. he figured out the shoes instead. And yeah. I think he gave Joanne a heads up beforehand, like,
okay, yeah.
I'm going to incorporate yeah. the shoes.
But, like, Joanne would have been on site, and, you know, at the
yeah, 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 yeah.
And,
yeah.
And so that's, and again, that's kind of real-time kind yeah, of stuff, yeah. you know?
The pump became such a pop cultural shoe, too. It transcended in this way, and some of that had to do with these movie appearances, Wayne's World, yep. and Austin yeah. Powers.
Yeah.
Did you have any say in that? Or
oh, what? No. Yeah. You know, no. I mean, as you can tell, you probably have to do a lot of filters here. The movie set's not my gig, you know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what would happen is that if the PR teams engaged with any of the movie studios or any of the actors or anything and they needed something special, we definitely, you know, myself or our team or somebody on the team would work on, you know, doctoring things up.
Yeah. How'd you feel though when, you know, there's the scene in Austin Powers where he just starts pumping, pumping, yeah. pumping,
and then it
explodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how much would you have to pump that shoe up to get it to explode?
So it's literally impossible because it's physics. What happens is that the way that we quilt it, right? Like yeah. the quilting on this is intended to let it expand only a certain amount. When we first made the pump, we didn't have any of these quilt patterns. So mm-hmm. you had this big air chamber. And it was like putting on a blood pressure cuff. And if you guys ever had your blood pressure taken, yeah. you know, a couple of pumps and all of a sudden compresses. You don't feel your fingers.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
So, yep. so that happened with us. And so the quilting actually allows it to only expand a certain amount in different areas, right? Mm-hmm. So with this little ball, it's you can really pump it up a lot, but you get to a level of pressure where you just can't open up or burp that little check valve that's in there. So you can't blow it up.
Did you have to change the pump at all or do any more re-engineering when you put it into Shaq's first signature shoe?
No, we just had to make it a lot bigger. And, yeah. and I know this sound. Now with Shaq's shoes, with the Shaq Gnosis and some of the other ones, we also had a fast forward into the Shaq time. Mm-hmm. Yep. We wanted to get to the next stage. And what Paul Fireman had said one time, he says, I want somebody to go to the Olympics and do you know, the 100-meter dash and basically fill up their shoes automatically and take off. So myself and my buddy Stephen Smith, you know Steve.
Yep, right?
So Steve and I were working together at the time. And
what
and
a combo. Wow. Yeah. Duo.
Name a more iconic duo, okay?
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks, tag team champs.
Yeah, no, thanks. Yeah, Steven's awesome. So we were trying to find out what was going on, and I was doing a lot of mountain biking at the time and stuff. So we went down to the indoor bike show. Mm-hmm. And we were walking around, and off in the corner there were these two guys, Jeff and Tony, out of Arizona. They had a little bike shop, but they had this thing called Tire Flate, and it was basically a little CO2 cartridge that you could literally, if you were racing, you could quickly take off, and you get a flat, change your tire, and basically instantly inflate it. So Steve and I are like, hey, can we take that? And they're like, yeah. So we went back and worked with myself and our colleague David LaCaraza, and we re-engineered it. So we came. Remember that Instaflate device, little cartridge?
Yeah.
Couldn't have it these days, but this is before 9/11, right? And so we metered it so you could fill it up. So one of Shaq's shoes had the Instaflate device, and that was a whole, you know, it's a CO2 canister, and that could overinflate things. So we had to do different stuff with that. So long story, but yeah. So there was different stuff that went on with Shaq shoes that were part of the next generation.
You come from obviously such a design and, you know, chemist background, but when I think a lot of us are interviewing celebrities about their first sneaker moment, so many of them, we just had Jake Gyllenhaal like 3 weeks ago. Yeah. And I said, like, what was your first sneaker memory? And he was like, all day just being in class, pumping up the Reebok.
No, that's cool. That's very, very cool.
What is it like to hear those stories? Again, you come from the design, and it was a challenge, how it's transcended pop culture.
So it's really gratifying. It's humbling, to be honest with you. And it's cool. I mean, it's wicked cool to be associated with cool people.
Yeah.
And so you guys know, I mean, I'm not. I work on this shit. I work on this stuff. You can edit that,
it's okay.
Right? Yeah. I mean, and I just really enjoy it, right? Mm-hmm. And so when cool people or notable people, you know, engage in it and dig it, it's awesome. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of icing on the cake. But so for me, what I try to do with all my product, and even now with GoRuck, the story, the romance of it, that will get people hopefully excited about it. Our job on the product side, and like your job here on the podcast, is to make sure people come back.
Yeah.
Make sure people buy it a second time. Make sure, you know, make sure the product lives up to the value, right? And so that's kind of the evergreen challenge of it all.
Yeah.
All right.
How do you make sure people understand the product? Because I feel like the Reebok pump, we keep using the word iconic, and it's absolutely a fair word to use. And it was this idea that you would pump the shoes up and you would jump higher.
Yeah.
Were kids getting confused about what it actually did? And did you have to educate them?
Yes, there was a lot of education going on, and that wasn't me. And as you can tell, I usually need a translator going out to the public. No, I mean that just because not here.
Yeah, I disagree because I'm ready to run through a wall. Yeah. Well, seriously.
But, with the GoRucks on.
Yeah, with the GoRucks on. Yeah.
Honestly, and I'm not even like, gassing.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. But it's just really cool. And I'll talk about the GoRuck thing in a minute because I'm old. I'm only at GoRuck because I'll tell you what, that cleanness, that like what you just referred to, like... that's at GoRuck. I mean, that GoRuck is a unique brand. Most people here may not know about it yet, but I got to tell you what, this brand is special because it's super clean. It's really about just the product and about, you know, what you're going to do with it, how it's going to behave, and how it's going to hold up for you. So, getting back. Sorry about that.
No.
This brief message was brought by GoRuck. But basically, the story and the messaging. Hopefully, I'm a little bit better at it as far as being calmer about it. I used to get pretty amped up when people would be a little bit looser in their definition of what it did. And
okay.
Stuff like that. And so
the marketing people maybe pushing the envelope a little too far,
and or you know, not stated the right way. Mm. But the point is that for me, I fortunately there are marketing people who are way better at their job than I would ever be. Mm. And so they tell the story in a cool, repetitive kind of shtick or a way that makes it work, right? And I'd be pretty passionate about describing what it does, and then somebody would distill it down, wordsmith it out, and make it understandable. Mm.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, so.
You mentioned Stephen Smith. Obviously, you guys worked together at Reebok for a while, and
One of his masterpieces is the Insta Pump Fury.
He and I did that.
Yeah. What was it like having to change the bag on that to make it fit into the running shoe versus the basketball model?
So we had already done a running shoe called the Pump Running, but it was, again, it was a bladder. So one of the challenges we had there was, actually, I was with Steven when he did his little doodle. We were in, I think, in Taiwan at the time. That's what he and I would do. We did pump cushioning at the time. We did Insta Pump Fury and all that. It wasn't, again, these are the names now. They were all called different names at the time. Yep. And you know, Steven, he's love you, kid, but you know, it's a thing, right? You know, so with that, taking all of the fit off except for the bladder, we needed the bladder to expand in a certain way and behave in a certain way, but then lock out and not continue. The other thing we needed to do was to make sure that the outside of the shoe actually acts as a bit of a brace to push the air in. If the air's up against your foot and there's nothing on the outside, it just continues to expand. So it'll expand out versus in.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of work, a lot of science on the engineering of the fabric. And went down to North Carolina, went down to a place called Adele Knits. We worked with myself and this guy, Matt Montrose. We worked on a certain kind of a fabric that would stretch it in a certain amount, but then lock out. And then we had to laminate that almost like a... Almost like a, you know, when you're on an airplane and they do the flight attendants do their life jacket.
Yeah.
So it's essentially a life jacket kind of process, you know, because that's basically a pump bladder, right? Mm-hmm. And at the time, we actually, Steve and I spent a lot of time actually out in at Takata in Japan, where they do the airbags, because airbags were new back then. Yep. Because that whole, so there's a lot of layers and a lot of overlap, Matt. So what we did was, you know, it allowed us to be kind of students of a bunch of different stuff to get to the destination. So that was one of the challenges with the Fury.
Would you think that that shoe would become this, like, I know you like the pump itself, the basketball shoe, that became such a part of early 90s, you know, legend. But then I feel like the Pump Fury's taken on its own life too as this huge, just like cult classic sneaker.
It's one of those conundrums, right? Mm-hmm. Because when we first did the Pump Fury, and Steven will tell you, it was a pariah because it didn't look, act, or behave.
And Reebok, they didn't really believe in it, in the colors and everything you guys wanted to put it in.
Matter of fact, I had to go to this guy, Ed Lucier, who was one of the VPs of marketing, and Paul Fireman. You know Ed?
Yeah.
So Eddie's awesome. Hey, Ed. We had to go there and basically ask a favor. Say, listen, can we please make it in this color? Because, and again, respect to the running team, they were trying to run the business.
Go on, you're traveling with me.
Yeah.
Give me a pair of travelers and I'll do it.
He'll be at the Comedy Cellar tonight.
Type five, please. Carry
on. There you go. So basically, they're trying to run. They're trying to manage their business, right? Mm-hmm. And in doing so, you know, you come up with this shoe that's got no midfoot arch at all.
Bizarre looking shoe,
and yet, it worked. I mean, it worked. It worked pretty well, and so we were able to force it from above into the business. And, you know, it was modestly respected. I can say that in hindsight. At the time, it probably wasn't highly endorsed. But what happened was, Matt, was that like some really early avant-garde folks around the world.
Yeah.
They started digging it, you know.
I think Bjork wore it early on.
Yeah, and also like in Tokyo, like I'm huge in Tokyo.
Jackie Chan
wore it. Yeah, we made some shoes for him and whatnot. And so, but
did you make the shoes for Jackie Chan? Were you involved in that?
Yeah.
So cool. How do you make a custom pair? Wow. Extra padding for him to kick people in the face? Or was that involved?
Colors.
Okay.
Colors and logos.
Did you speak with Jackie Chan when you were making them? Okay.
No, I'm not allowed to talk.
You. I mean, you're the mad scientist. I feel like they don't keep you totally locked in a lab. Like you must have met 50 Cent or Jay-Z when they were.
Oh yeah. Well, that was Todd Krinsky, who's the CEO of Reebok now.
Yeah.
Shout out T. And because he had RBK.
Yeah.
And so that was a whole different.
Of course.
Yeah.
Did you meet 50 and Jay when they came?
I met
brand?
50.
They put the pump on one of the G Unit shoes. Too, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. And my buddy Bill McGinnis spent a bunch of time with 50 and stuff like that. He thought he was cool. Bill's not cool.
Bill's trying to sign the G Unit.
Did 50 wear test the pump to get it?
Oh yeah.
It? What was that like?
Yeah, well, he was pretty badass back then, you know. And so
still
like,
badass.
Yeah, no,
just
I get
the case.
It.
My
no,
goat.
I get
just
it.
The
no.
case.
No, yeah, if you're listening, he told me to say that, you know. So yeah, those guys wanted to wear it, and so they did. But it was again all of these things, you know. I can tell like a story that connects.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really like that. It was about like these efforts and these moments, and then either actions or reactions to what's going on, right? You know, and so. You know, the Fury, I thought it was a really cool next step, because what we did was we made a customized shoe in the pump. Mm-hmm. But then we took everything off except for the pump, you know, and that was the Fury. And so, you know, I was happy with how it worked and performed. I know it may not have been the coolest looking shoe at the time.
But it's funny you say that, because in 2001, I remember, didn't they do a Chanel version of the
Instinct? Yeah, sure.
You talk about like aesthetically and not being aesthetically pleasing, but then they did this super rare.
It doesn't get much cooler than that.
Okay, but check this out. And this is what's funny about that. Okay. That's 2001. We did the Fury in 93 and launched it in 94. That's a long drought before you get your first date. Okay.
You know? Yes. You
know? True. I mean, ahead of your time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. You're just out of step with time. You know, one or the other.
Totally.
No, but that's cool. But that's also, again, and again, props to Reebok, Steve Vincent, and the late, great Al at AIT, the folks at Nike Innovation. You know, we had, our companies gave us the luxury of time. And with that luxury of time, we were challenged to make new stuff. Mm. And the new stuff had to work. So sometimes if you push the envelope too far, you are, I guess, ahead of your time. But a lot of times it just looked like you're out of step at the moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you just gotta have thick skin, and you just gotta keep on moving ahead.
How much do you miss those, you know, late 80s, early 90s, like sneaker wars days where, you know, Reebok, Nike, and Adidas are all battling to make the coolest, most innovative shoes?
It's funny. I was really happy to be part of that, like really happy and really lucky to be part of that. I don't miss it, because I think now with the way things are, like, and again, I'm going to circle back to GORUCK. I'm at GORUCK because this company has got an ethos of committing to a standard. It's founded by Jason McCarthy, who was a retiring Green Beret, who made a go bag for his wife, and, you know, the whole story. Mm-hmm. And when I met Jason in 2013 and 14, because Reebok was evaluating whether they might want to get into business with them, that's how I met Jason. And the first thing he said, he goes, "Hey, you did the pump, huh?" I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "Oh, you got any samples?" I go, "Yeah, I'm right here," you know, and because I had him in my office. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Let me see him." So he and I just, and he, I said, "So you did the GR1, which is our first rucksack." And he approached his product in a similar fashion that I did on the pump, and with all the bumps and bruises, and then the pretty story at the end, right? Mm-hmm. And he and I just kind of like hit it off. So long story, Matt, is that the old days were awesome, and I was really happy to be part of it, in the thick of it. Mm-hmm. But like today, where the sneaker business has evolved, and mobile phones, mm-hmm. you know, social media, that kind of stuff is kind of more important, arguably, than the brands themselves. The different items that get dropped are awesome, but like the brands are just kind of the big brands. Well, to have a startup like GORUCK, mm-hmm. and to have it like as clean for me, and as clear about what it's supposed to be and what I'm supposed to do, which is make stuff that works. Mm-hmm. This is like a 2.0 version of our sneaker wars. And I'm sure there are smaller brands out there who may feel the same way. Because, you know, to break in to the big boys world.
Do you see that with like all this like emergence of brands like Hoka and On, like getting into the space? Do you think that they're bringing that like early 90s sneaker wars energy?
I think they're bringing a similar vibe, not necessarily the sneaker wars, but maybe the upstart, like, mm-hmm. at the time,
challengers.
Yeah, the challengers. Yeah. Like at the time, it was the OG Adidas and Puma. Then you had Nike, and Converse was always there as well. Yep. And there were a couple of big, there was Saucony, there was Etonic, there was Onitsuka, which became Asics. Yes. You know, those guys were the big dogs, right?
Did they ever try and poach you? Did Nike ever try and hire you away from Reebok?
No, nobody wants me.
No big offer.
No, I'm an acquired taste, Brandon. Okay.
But how competitive were you at the time about like the whole like ethos of like wanting to bury Nike?
Dude, To say laser focus would be probably an understatement.
Love that. Speaking my language.
Yeah, you know, and again, you know, this is all right, this is the kinder version of me. Like, seriously, and again, it's just part of the gig. If you're gonna, for me, two things. If I want to be in the game, I better be a student of what I'm doing and really learn my craft. And number two, I will do everything above board to win. Everything, which is why I love GORUCK, because they live the same way.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Not to keep talking about other iterations, I was like an intern at Complex, and one sneaker from that era that always sticks out was the A-Life tennis ball pumped.
Oh, yeah, sure.
So when that came out, was it cool to
Michael
see?
Chang
pumped? Well, it was a Chang. Before it was A-Life, it was a Chang. Yep. A-Life was second gen.
Yes, exactly. Yep. But I remember just like the pages of Complex, and like I was helping intern, but I remember just like full pages of that specific model. What was it like to see those iterations?
So I was still at Reebok in 2009, 2010 when the 20-year anniversary came up. And to be honest with you, when the Reebok business units were like, hey, we'd like you to get involved, I'm like, well, cool, but no thanks. Yeah. You know, like it was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, it's going to be cool. I'm like, yeah, my mother and father will like it, and that'll be about it. You know, like I wasn't that tuned in to where it could go. So doing some of the collaborations and some of the, you know, like with A-Life and some of the other stuff that
did
that
you work on there was the Soulbox one where the pump lit up on it.
I didn't work on it directly, but yeah, I was around to help out with some of that and all that. And yeah, so those guys, all that stuff was just. It was really cool. It was very cool. And to see even the OG pump, when we remade it with like EVA so it wouldn't fall apart and stuff like that, you know, when it started running down the line and when the Fury was running down the line, you know, I did some stuff with Sneaker Freaker with Woody.
Yeah.
A Sneaker Freaker. Shout out, Woody. Yes. And it was just cool to see the product. I mean, honestly, the intent was to make something that worked and to keep my job. Yeah. Wasn't intended to talk about it 20 years later or goddamn 35 goddamn years later. I mean,
amazing.
Shit.
Amazing.
Come on, right? Yeah. I mean, for real, it's just one of those deals where I just, you know, I really appreciate you guys doing it because it's a proud moment. But, I mean, this is only happening because of you guys. For real. And I mean, this is not just platitudes. It's legit because you guys talk about this stuff. You guys make it important. Mm. And then the customer and the consumer makes it important.
What about the John Cena moment?
So
wearing pumps in the ring.
Back in the wrestling.
So okay.
Wrestling means nothing to me.
And he's from Massachusetts.
Yeah, so, we're 4 days away from he does not like wrestling. We're 4 days away from WrestleMania that just passed. But John Cena.
So here's the deal. So at Reebok at the time, we were a small kind of eclectic group, right? There was this young dude out of the Boston area, Mike Longo. Mike, if he lives in Asia right now.
Okay.
I'm going to see him next trip in Vietnam. Just saw my last trip. He's working out there. Longo was our World Wrestling Federation contact.
Okay.
He used to have all the athletes in, like Hulk, Jim Hacksaw.
Did he make those, there was the Macho Man, Randy Savage, Reeboks?
That was Longo.
Wow.
That was Mike.
Wow.
And so Mike would have all these guys in, like, and these guys were... They were just really cool dudes.
Yes.
And so Longo would hook them all up with not only product and whatnot, but also like cool stuff. And so he orchestrated all of those moments, and that was really cool. So Cena, he's a mask guy.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So he would come into the office, Cena, to like
those guys would. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there were a lot of them, and Longo would.
I'll take Jackie Chan over John Cena.
Whoa. Yeah. So Jackie Chan was awesome. Michael Chang was awesome. Yeah. Those.
Jackie Chan came to the office.
He in the Hong Kong office. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Mike Longo.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I need to hear about Jackie Chan.
I didn't interact much with him, but him and Michael Chang in our Hong Kong office, literally like walked on water. Yeah. Wow.
I guess
crazy stuff.
To go into the next stuff, you have the bag of GORUCK shoes.
Yeah, I do. All right, so
GORUCK bag too, right?
Oh yeah, GORUCK bag, GORUCK everything. Here's the thing: GORUCK based from a backpack, rucksack. When I met Jason McCarthy, he wanted to make footwear. He needed to do it his way, and he needed to do it clean. So I worked with Jason. I worked with our senior advisor and my boss now, Richard Rice, who is a original OG kind of Green Beret, as well as a he helped found some of the most special and secretive units in the United States military. Mm-hmm. He's got a legendary background that I'm not going to talk anything about.
We're not even allowed to talk
no,
about it.
No, it's not my story. And honestly, Rich will hear this.
They might kick in the doors
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, it wouldn't be cool. However, the fact was he was in Vietnam, and he wanted to make the original Jungle Welco. The Jungle boot that was made by Welco, it had certain features and benefits. So we wanted to make our first boot that was an homage to that, but an update. Mm-hmm. So we made our Mach V1, and then this is a version of that right here. Mm-hmm. But then, more importantly, as we started doing different work, we did a bunch of fitness things. We made sandbags, we make ruck plates. And so we started opening the aperture of footwear, and we wanted to make the most functional kind of gym shoe you could. Mm-hmm. So what we did was we ended up making a shoe we called the Ballistic Trainer.
Yep.
And again, we in the CrossFit space, functional fitness, there, a lot of people do zero drop, a lot of people do a little biomechanically to develop more power. You want to have a certain heel lift, you want to put yourself in a certain position. So we made the Ballistic Trainer in a particular way to take advantage of those positions, and we put in we have a contoured sock liner that we had developed actually with the NFL way back when, you know, to support the foot. It's a three dimension. It carries all three of your arches. I can pull some of these out.
Yeah, sure.
So, and we actually.
You know, he's a real CrossFitter too, so you're speaking his language right now.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. I'll get you some kit. Have you got some Ballistic
Trainer? I haven't had a chance to try the shoes yet.
Okay, so you're what, 11?
Yes. Or 11 and a half.
11 and a half, all right, yeah.
Right on eyesight.
Good, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, those are a little bit puffy. I didn't know if that was, you know. So this is one of the new models we're going to make for the CrossFit Games. Here, check it out. So what we did, Matt, was...
He was going to do the open this year, but he had to skip it.
Yeah.
That's not a joke.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't tell when you're joking.
No,
give me a wink or something, will you? Jesus.
Oh, that's the whole point.
So, Matt, here's what we did.
He threw his back out.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
Fun times.
He was wearing wrong shoes, I guess.
Yeah. There it is.
Dude, okay, so don't know, don't care what you wear, okay?
Yeah.
Here's the deal. I want to get you a pair of these. What we did was, it's a one-piece engineered knit upper so for some flexibility. This is a ballistic nylon polyester material that will withstand rope climbing.
Yep.
It also locks your foot over your heel. And then what we do is, it's a low profile heel, but what we did was, it's a three compound, check this out, Joe, you love this.
Yes.
Okay, high abrasion for high abrasion heel. This is actually a rock climbing material. So this thing here will take rope climbs and not wear down, not tear apart, not fall apart. And this has got a stickier 4 foot for traction, okay? And so what we did also was, we ended up putting in the shoe our three-dimensional molded sock liner. It's got a medial arch like a lot of them do. It's got a longitudinal arch, and it's got a little bump in the front for your transverse arch. The intent is to hold your foot. Now, I know CrossFitters...
That's it?
Yeah, sure. And there you go, Brent. Here.
Do you think a lot of like people who are developing shoes at the brands have the same sort of like institutional knowledge that you have about how all these things work? Or is this like something that... There's like a course you can take where you can get all this stuff, or you're only going to learn it from doing it for 40 years?
I don't know how many people in the brands have got the experience I have. It's not mystery. I went to undergrad for biochemistry and nutrition. I got my master's degree in exercise science and muscle metabolism. Went on to do basically muscle metabolism research and performance research before I got in the business. Got kicked out of a PhD program, decided to get in the sneaker business for a few weeks, literally.
So you think all that stuff, because you get a lot of people nowadays who just love sneakers and they want to go into making shoes just because they like wearing shoes and the way they look. But do you think that going through all those processes would maybe better inform someone who wants to like figure out how sneakers work?
Matt, without a doubt. And here's the deal for me. It's like when I go to a car dealership. And you get the guy who's the salesman, and he'll tell you what buttons work, and he'll tell you what the color is, he'll tell you what the options are. The dude doesn't know anything about the car, and it baffles me. It's like, how do you do your job without getting down to? I mean, I'll go because of my science background. I'll get down to the molecular level, literally on the formulations. I just will. We'll look at primers, we'll look at adhesives, we'll look at ways to make things, we'll do all kinds of stuff. Matt, what we also did in there, because I know the CrossFit community typically, or the the community out in the exercise functional fitness space is used to kind of flatter shoes.
Yep.
So with our ballistic trainer, in every pair, you've got you get your contoured molded sock liner.
Yep.
A lot of people don't like that. So we actually also include a 5 millimeter flat pair of sock liners.
There we go.
Of a and that's actually more substantial than most sock liners you're going to get in any shoe. Just general. We put two in. We spend a lot of money making sure that you we give you a broad range of stuff that will satisfy your needs. Again, this is what makes things different with GORUCK. GORUCK is all about making it so that it's legit, making it so you guys get an experience with the product that measures up to the standard and the value that you guys have.
One thing I love too, I was looking at the website and you go to the footwear section and there's a kind of a mission statement at the top. It says at GORUCK, we have the freedom and the independence to build every style from the ground up with zero input from shareholders or finance types.
Yeah.
Listen, we like Pat Riley's feedback. None of that's happening at GORUCK, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, believe me. Let me tell you something.
Pat Riley's got a pair?
Let me tell you something. The community that Jason and the team and these guys come from.
No bean counters.
No bean counters, but they are on Pat Riley kind of levels in their own world.
Love it.
Quiet professionals, people that will just disappear into those shadows out there. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you what, they talk to us. They talk to me. Very pointedly.
Okay.
okay. Many times. You know.
Speaking of engineering, I just have to get your opinion on this. Did you think Nike, like Air Max, was crap when it first came out, or you think it was, or did you think it was legit and you had to worry about it? As far as like from like an engineering, this product actually works perspective.
So, interesting question. Did it work? Yeah, like from a vertical component, the bag, the cushioning bag that Frank Rudy, Marion Rudy did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's legit. When Nike did the bag, they used to fill it with CFC 131, which is a fluorocarbon. Because
that was the greenhouse gases.
Because what would happen is that the bag itself needed to be static for the time, and it would literally leak out.
Yep.
Not leak like catastrophically, just kind of profuse out.
Like lose its pressure.
They would lose its pressure. And what they did was they actually did this science where they were looking at, I think it was between 18 and 24 PSI it needed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, over time, that plastic would expand a little bit. So they had to calculate how do you take an account where, and that's why the range, because ultimately I think they wanted it to be about 18 PSI. So at first it's about 24 PSI, but then the airbag would expand a little bit and the pressure would drop. And so this is the kind of stuff to me that is just super cool. And this is the kind of stuff to me that is, it's not the magic, it's the effort.
It's the magic, Brennan,
to me, I mean, it might be magic as you talk about it, but dude, that's how you get down to like the molecular level. Now, was I ever afraid of Nike Air Max? No, I respect the hell out of them, still respect Nike. I mean, as a competitor, absolutely. And the fact that they have no regard for anyone else, I love that. Mm. It's awesome. By the way, I couldn't give a rat's ass about them. at a professional, at a personal level, you know, God love them all, you know,
Steven ends up like creating the Vapor Max at Reebok originally, right?
So
did you help him with that?
We had a lot of product that we did in the mid 90s that never saw the light of day. It was our job.
You're literally like scientists in the lab, like creating this stuff.
Or just goofballs messing around, you know?
Give yourself some credit.
Yeah, no, I'm okay with that. So Brendan, I actually I'm pretty confident with what I do and what we do. But, you know, again, out there in the world today, a lot of people want to put a big label on you.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm just doing my job. I happen to love it. I happen to work really hard at it. And I want to learn everything about it every day, literally. Yeah. I just do.
So, GORUCK, how can people get them? What's the best way to get them?
So here's the deal. I want to talk about one other shoe as well.
Of course.
So, we also just did a shoe we call the Rough Runner, okay? Mm-hmm. What this is, it's actually a running style. It's a ruck running shoe. Mm-hmm. It's designed differently than all the other running shoes out there today.
But, you said it's a Rough Runner?
The Rough Runner.
Real shoe dog stuff. Rough.
Well, it actually comes from
that's rough.
Yeah.
Okay.
I get that.
I want my credit.
Yeah, I do.
I want my credit.
I gotta. I got to be the celebrity. Yeah. Actually, Jillian said the talent. I got to be the talent.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Let
yeah.
him know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, here yeah. you go, kid. These shoes, they're a running shoe. They're a rock running shoe. But they're different than the shoes out there today. The midsole is substantially different in material. It's highly resilient. It's lightweight. It's flexible. But it's also going to hold up. Now, as it turns out, this is a great training shoe.
Are like treadmill shoes?
It's a treadmill shoe.
Because I need my dude. I need one.
I got to hook you boys up okay. after this.
I need one.
Actually, maybe some other guys could hook the boys up.
Thank there you. You go. Yeah. My treadmill shoes, yeah, yeah. but not great. I need yeah. to step it up.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal. And this is honest to God's truth. When we're all done, whatever you guys get, whatever we can get for you guys.
Thank you, brother.
I want feedback. Yeah. Literally, yeah, like the platitudes. Hey, it's great. That's awesome. I want to know what's not working. And that's because that's what we do. That's what we do. And GORUCK is tenacious at that. We really are. And so this Rough Runner is a really, really cool training shoe. It's on a running platform. It's got the proper heel bevel. It's got an offset. It's got the right kind of geometries and stuff, but it's going to hold up. It's going to hold up way different than most running shoes out there today with the super critical foams and the yes. stuff that breaks down quickly and things like that. No disrespect to that, but like, you know, what you trade off in lightweight and sponginess, mm-hmm. it breaks down too fragile. Mm-hmm. This stuff here is going to hold up.
Very nice.
Love it.
Very nice.
See, he's the better salesman than the guy who doesn't know about the car, right?
Absolutely.
Well, thanks.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks. Yes. Thanks. Yeah. So what we did at GORUCK also, and because I need to say this for this podcast, and by the way, yeah. honestly, guys, thank you so much for thank having you, me on. Man. This yep. is awesome. We have a discount for your listeners.
Oh.
It's Complex 20. So it's your name with the 20. Mm-hmm. If you come on to GORUCK in Complex 20, we'll give you 20% off, I believe. Anything you want, just buy away. And for anybody who tries it, our intent literally is to make sure you're happy with the product. You know, we do some lifetime warranties. We do certainly quality and legitimacy warranty. We have one of the best, for a little small company, we have one of the best customer service teams going. These guys engage like all the time with as much enthusiasm as I have.
Are they ever going to surprise you with a version that has the pump on it?
Who knows? You might do that. Yeah, yeah. So yeah. So GORUCK is we're an emerging brand, and to your point earlier, Matt, about like, you know, the sneaker wars, the old eyes. So today, this is us coming in from a guerrilla tactic. You know, like GORUCK is
guerrilla unit.
Yeah. GORUCK is going to surprise a lot of people with these shoes.
Love
this,
it.
This is our CrossFit game shoe, mm-hmm. Ballistic Trainer, and you guys have got the game shoes for the Rough Runners, and so we are the we just signed a big yep. Partnership deal
with
CrossFit.
Official sponsor, yeah, yeah. Official footwear sponsor of the CrossFit Games.
Footwear and apparel yep. For the CrossFit Games, and the CrossFit team has been awesome to work with, mm-hmm. and so it's a whole thing.
Listen, 35 years ago, you said you never knew that you would be talking about these 35 years later. Your passion is infectious. Cool. I just want to say that.
Thank you.
Leaving here, very, very inspired. Thank you so much for giving us the time. So much history.
Yep.
You live and breathe it. You
yeah.
could tell.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me. I really do.
We appreciate Sincere. You, Paul. Okay. Actually, one more question, if I might. You said you have a little bit of Irish pride.
Yeah.
I got to fit this question in because Joe didn't want to ask it on Sneaker
Shopping. Oh, here you go.
Very briefly, one more anecdote, one more selfish anecdote is he recently had Conor McGregor on Sneaker Shopping. And I was
with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Okay, yeah.
When yeah. Gyllenhaal brought up the Reebok pump, it was on the Conor McGregor.
And I was urging Joe to ask Conor whether or not, as an Irishman, he felt it was offensive to put the Reebok Union Jack on his feet so frequently. was that ever an issue for you?
So it wasn't, because it's not the Union Jack.
Okay.
So big
this is
brain
the,
guy.
Let him know. Yeah. He tried to have
big brain Brendan here.
McGregor would have had me in a rear naked choke if I asked.
Here we go.
Here we go. The original Reebok logo is not the Union Jack.
Okay.
It's almost like a disjointed American flag, if you will. It's got the star. I mean, it's got the design features and the lines, but they're not in the right place. It's almost be like stars and stripes being all over the
place.
Got it.
Okay.
So, my friend, okay? a little apologies coming out of him. Okay?
Let him know.
He wanted I me was to, wrong. Yeah, I was wrong.
Yeah. That's all I needed. So, Connor, a two-piece over the Union Jack flag controversy.
So what's cool is that at the, towards the end of my time at Reebok, we actually did work with the UFC. We made gear for them. Mm-hmm. I met Connor. I met John Jones.
Yes.
Met like
Diaz.
Yeah, no, I didn't meet Diaz. Ronda Rousey. Met all kinds of people. Like made a bunch of gear and stuff. That was very those people are legit.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Awesome. Legit. Paul, thank you so much. This has been really, really exciting. Yep. So much history. Everyone check out GoRuck. Everyone, you guys are going to get a lot of knowledge in this episode, so we can't thank you enough.
Great. Thanks very much. And don't forget Complex 20.
You heard it. Thanks. All right, everyone. This has been the Complex Sneaker Show. We hope everyone has a great weekend. Please like, subscribe. We will see you next week.
Thank you.
Our producer is Jillian Hardman-Webb. Our supervising producer is David Matthews. Audio editing done by Haley Choi. Research and graphics from Sean Villavicencio. The Complex Sneaker Show is a production of the Complex Podcast Network.